Hey, Kate.
Oh, hi! I want to paint a picture.
Okay. I like pictures.
I have currently constructed like a war room out of my kitchen because Shannon, who comes and helps me with Frankie on today when I usually take a lot of my work calls, had to take a partial sick day right during the time when I had a bunch of calls. Totally, it's fine. But long story short, I had to take a bunch of calls with Frankie. And oh, yeah. So I created the war room so that she would, have places to not accidentally maim herself. And
Fair, fair.
I still somehow managed in the course of one of the calls to, like, as she was falling, I punched her in the face. I didn't mean to. It wasn't like a closed fist punch. Don't call DCF on me, but like it was like I was reaching for her as she fell, and like I think my nail nipped the corner of her cheek, and then she was on the call, crying, and I'm accidentally hung up on the person. It was just like, thank God it was like one of my most laid back favorite clients, so it worked out,
Yeah.
in terms of universal timing. But that's what I'm working with today. How about you?
Oh, I've just been, just got off of 2 straight hours of ad work.
Oh.
And then I managed to do laundry and yeah, that's about all I got.
Laundry. Is laundry building?
There is, but it's not, it's questionable, so I just go to the laundromat down the street.
It's questionable. What does that even mean?
Meaning that it might take like 7 romps in the dryer before anything gets dry.
Oh.
And sometimes there's mild flooding involved with the washer. It's just better if we go to the go to the laundromat.
Oh, that sucks.
It's like
To be.
literally like 500 foot walk from the door. So it's not,
It's not like a big deal.
yeah.
We have it in our basement here.
Ah, delightful. This
Like
is
a
a really
Blairwitch basement.
fascinating episode of
Hey, look, domestic stuff
Yeah.
gets a bad rap. I think that it's actually really important to talk about, like, A, the price of things. This is a
Yes.
passion of mine, people disclosing what they're paid and how much
Yeah.
things cost. I'm fascinated by that. But also, the deep mysticism of housework.
Fair, fair. That is what I have on the docket for the rest of the day is probably I would estimate another 2 hours of ad work and then like a deep clean of the apartment.
I am about to embark on a shedding as well. Oh, I wanted to add that to a list of things I wanted to talk about.
Shedding
Shedding
your
and
skin or your
oh, I'm typing in the wrong place. Shedding, hoarding, anxiety. And I don't know, but everybody's been talking lately about CBD oil
Sure,
slash hemp oil.
like you do.
Okay, I'm glad we got that sorted. This sounds like the conversation we usually have before we start recording,
Yeah,
but
but there I don't think we would have ever hit record if we had gone down this rabbit hole before.
no, I agree.
Yeah. So you're taking on some new classes.
I am. I'm switching. I've been trying to keep the volume the same.
Okay. What do you mean by volume?
I mean, I'm not like adding new stuff. I'm
Yo,
squirreling stuff.
okay, I got you.
But I'm taking over Peter's Monday night 6 p.m. slow flow.
Oh, delightful.
And this is lovely and serendipitous and for many reasons. One of the most obvious being, you know, the class that I had become most attached to at Yoga Works was a 6 p.m. Monday night slow flow.
Yeah.
That's the one that was the most difficult to step away from.
Yeah.
And I'm on the other side of it's just an interesting experience that's given me something to reflect on. I have now, you know, experienced both sides of the coin of being in a class that every week had a wait list, and I could walk in and felt comfortable to teach yoga, it didn't matter that it was called slow flow. It was yoga, you know, it was whatever we're doing that week. And it was just comfortable. It was comfortable for me in that way. And then to help, you know, pick out who, you know, was going to take it when I left, because, you know, you want to at least know the person a little. And, I mean, you advocated for me, and I'm so grateful for that, because it ended up being very, very formative in some ways, those Monday, Wednesday classes, as you made your transition. And, you know, so then I am over here, and Peter, who is beloved, and for good reason, he is a skillful teacher and a delightful human being. Funny and dark.
Yep.
And intelligent and measured.
Yes.
And certainly elements of mysterious, my goodness. There's a code to crack there. You know, like, it's just it's a rich class.
Yeah.
And we definitely have a lot of values in common, without a doubt. But we're different, you know, and I think our approach to slow flow is inherently different. Anyways, I say all of this because I am going to step into a class that is very well attended for him, and those people may not stay.
Yeah.
Because this is just the life cycle of classes at yoga studios. It's like the natural ebbing and flowing of where students go when there's transitions. So I don't personally feel, you know, attached to trying to make people happy by doing something like imitate him. That's just not me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. But I would be lying if I said that it isn't, like, just for a moment, a little disorienting to be like, oh gosh, I'm stepping into somebody's shoes, but these are the kind of words that are, like, thrown around in this scenario. You know, you're stepping into somebody's shoes. And I'm like, I'm not really. They're just not teaching this class anymore. I'm going to teach the class now. You know, like, not everything has to be this, like, mythic transitional torch passing. You know?
Well, and that's also, like, kind of the narrative. Like, studios think that if they sometimes think that if they, like, spin that narrative, that it smooths out the transition. Like, there's always a subtle thing of, like, who's the successor to whom in terms of, you know, it sort of goes back to this, like, trying to spin a lineage out of just the happenstance of two people studying with the same person. Does that make sense?
Oh my god, you're right.
Like,
yeah.
And it's just like, no, like, you have different influences than Peter has different influences than you. Like, I think it's a good fit? Do I think it makes sense? Absolutely. But, you know, it's going to be a different class. Just how could it not be, you know?
I mean, when you looked around and asked me and advocated for me to take over Monday and Wednesday, you know, it was never because you knew that I was going to come in and do what you do, because I can't do what you do. But you knew I was going to come in and care about the same people in the same way, I imagine, was part of it. At least that's what
Yeah, I mean,
remember talking about. Oh.
I knew that no one would, that there would be the same level of accessibility and thoughtfulness in the class, even though it would be a fundamentally different class in terms of the actual, like, okay, we're doing this, and then now we're doing this, and then now we're doing this. Like, that would be different, but the accessibility of the class and the thoughtfulness of the class, I would have no, had no doubt that you would be able to continue that on. And then the people, of course, who regularly came to that class, I think a lot of them ended up staying and continuing to take that class.
Yeah, it's interesting though to be on, to be so quickly on the heels of both sides of the coin for me. Like, well, leaving something and then walking into something that was beloved, you know. And I, it's just a good reminder that like every part of this is, and this is so cheesy, but every single part of this is the yoga, you know, like. Let go, let go, let go, let go. All of us. Let's just let go. You know, and I'm grateful for returning to a class that has the label on it, Slow Flow, because, you know, it's been a couple months now that I've only been teaching Heated Flow and Vinyasa, and I really enjoy, quote unquote, teaching a flow class or a class that doesn't have slow flow in front of it. Like, I think there's, like, I enjoy that. I enjoy that, but I miss slow flow. And when you don't teach something under that label for like a little period of time, like, I think there's, you know, there's going to be a re-entry. And also, there's
Well,
just like, I overthink everything.
it's
So.
just a game of expectations is all we're really talking about with the names. It's like, what are people expecting when they walk into the room? And, based on what the name of the class is, then you gotta manage expectations. It's very possible over time that you can just sort of develop your own groove with what the class is, and sure, there'll be people who come in and be like, "What is this?" But then there'll be like a solid enough group of people who are oriented enough to what you're trying to do that it won't matter so much. I've had to have a few conversations over the last couple weeks just that brought back up the whole topic of like class names and things like that. And it's still just as frustrating as ever, because I don't know, in the absence of directly experiencing someone's class, you need as many words as are available to you to describe someone's class. Like, and to try and like get some like memeified thing, branded thing that describes how someone is teaching is just a, at this point, it just seems disingenuous. So like we've talked about, slow flow becomes this sort of catch-all for anything that doesn't fit into the standard vernacular. And then there's this sort of nebulous expectation for what flow means, which, depending on who your influences are and where you were first exposed to yoga, is going to be radically different. So I don't know. It's just a I was sort of hoping that I would be done with that conversation, but I've realized that
It's
I
only just begun. I don't know the rest of the
Yeah, I
song.
don't know either. I'm not sure anybody does. I think it just like nebulously
ends there?
tra
I think
that
that's where it ends.
I yeah no I think it just like trails off into instrumental because we've only heard it for the past like 15 years as like instrumental background behind a film or TV show. So you just get that and then like the rest of the song is implied.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I know that like once you're teaching, it doesn't matter. What matters is what's happening in the classroom, you know? But what you said about expectations resonates, you know, and I value these transitions as an opportunity to reflect on what I'm doing or not doing, saying or not saying. You know, it gets you out of your comfort zone. You're forced to contend with like a little bit of disruption in routines and expectations, and you get to meet new people and say, all right, let's try something. Let's try something. Let's all be here. Yeah, it's going to be different. So yeah, I'll keep you up to date, but I'm excited. I'm bummed though because I really enjoyed taking Peter's class, and it's clearly a loss to to the greater Boston yoga scene.
He'll be back.
Totally. I mean, I can't imagine why.
He'll be back. I don't know that, but I'm just making wild speculation.
Well, that's my favorite kind of speculation.
It's really just wishful thinking because it's like the more people like Peter and people like, even people like Fez are like, yeah, I don't know that I'm just gonna go and do this other thing. And I'm like, no, you can't leave me alone.
So let's talk about that because that really is at the heart of what's happening. At some point, statistically, after a certain number of years of teaching, people stop. You know, statistically, most of them,
Well,
not
let's
all of
be
them.
people
So don't
stop
write
te
angry emails.
people stop teaching group classes that involve moving and breathing instruction. Let's put it that way. Because there are definitely people who stop, like, are still teaching yoga in a just in a very, very different form. But yes, there is a cutoff in which it seems that it is impossible to sustain teaching group moving and breathing classes, which seems to be right around the 10-year mark, which is what I'm slowly bumping into.
So, what is it about the 10-year mark that happens for teachers that that's a thing?
I can offer wild speculation. One, it feels like 10 years is seems to be because there's also a little bit of a cutoff at the 5-year mark. Like there's but it seems like to get past 10, that's an even bigger hurdle. But there it seems like how do I say this? Like the it's 10 years is enough for yoga to shift so radically that you're like, wait, what the fuck is this now? This is what people are doing? Like
Oh my
there's
God, that's it. You're
that.
right.
Then I think there's also a potential realization of the limitations of what we've culturally decided upon as being a yoga class. And then there's also the distancing within one's personal experience from the experience of the person who's getting on the mat for the first time. I don't know that that made any sense when it came out of my mouth. But like the longer that you practice, it is possible that it would be harder and harder to reflect back on what it felt like to just be starting. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
And again,
And I
that
think is pretty freaking genius, actually.
and it could be more, I'm not saying that these are all at play for every human, but like I think they're certainly at play for a lot of folks. They're at play for me. I think outside of just a teacher's own sort of development and cycle, I think there's also just, we've sort of reached this pretty major transition to where, we're, as far as the yoga industry is concerned, we're really just talking about a service industry. There's like a little side industry that's like yoga education. I wouldn't even necessarily put all teacher trainings in that little side pocket. But certainly some. But really, we're just talking about a service industry at this point.
Oh, that makes me uneasy.
And that's, I don't know that it makes me uneasy. It just makes me want to be really clear. Like, I think there's great value to a group experience of yoga. And I think over time, with enough group experiences of yoga, you could have sort of you could start to pick up on some things. But then, I guess what I'm saying is if both industries were happening alongside each other and were really clear about like that it's like what it and I've been thinking about this a lot because of the working group that I'm a part of for Yoga Alliance, which we can talk a little bit about. But I keep coming back to that thing that Leslie Kaminoff always says that like 200 hours makes you an instructor. You can get up in front of the room and you can lead people through a sequence. That's fine. We don't need more hours for that. Like, you maybe there could be an argument to say that you need actually you don't you could do that in less hours. Like, I was really thinking about it. Like, I'm not really teaching people hands-on adjustments at this point. I'm not really teaching people in a training setting any sort of in-depth view of Ayurveda at this point. There's a bunch of ancillary stuff that like if I really wanted if I were at a bigger studio and I needed to train teachers in order to teach a particular sequence or a particular template and to do that in a safe and inclusive way with the right template, I'm not sure that I would even need 200 hours. As long as there was ongoing mentorship going on afterwards, right? So it wasn't like me just like throwing like, okay, you're done, go out into the world and like be a teacher. Like that would be the caveat. But because if we are really moving into a service industry, we do need more folks to teach in that way. And of course, it's not like a simple binary. There's always going to be a gray area in between. I don't, yeah, I just don't know what that's gonna look like. And also I feel like, for me personally, I'm getting to the point of like, okay, so yoga is valuable to me. It has, brought about some really positive changes in my life over the past, I guess 14, 15 years. And but like I'm at this point where like I'm happy, like if people want to learn, I'm happy to teach, but I'm not gonna like, or if people just want help and support, I'm happy to help and support, but I don't fundamentally think this is necessary for everybody. Like it's just not. Like I'm gonna continue to practice. At least as far as I can tell. But it would also be totally fine if I was like, you know what, this isn't worthwhile anymore. Like that would be fine too. I haven't gotten anywhere near that point, but I'm, you know, never say never. But yeah, that's kind of my thought.
So I want to back up to something that I didn't want to interrupt because you were saying a bunch of interesting things. I think you hit the nail on the head with your observation that at the 10-year mark, you've been teaching long enough that there have likely been at least one sea change in the actual field.
Yeah.
Like, because it's so young, why wouldn't there be multiple, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I also think it's enough time that within a decade, most young adults, people are starting teaching when they're young adults often, have themselves had a sea change or two. So,
Or five or seven
yeah, in the
or
course of a decade, they
yeah.
may have moved or married or divorced
Or had
or
multiple
gone back to
jobs, or
school.
yeah.
Exactly. Like it, there, it's just ripe for the intersection of both an industry sea change and a personal sea change, so that it's an ideal time to stop and look back and say, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And where do I now intersect with what's happening?
Yeah.
Huh. And that doesn't happen as much in, like, let's say, for example, that you're 10 years into being a lawyer.
Sure,
You know,
yeah.
lawyers have been like the expectation and the understanding of what's happening in the law is structured in a little bit more of a, you know, there's a lot more buttressing around it of expectations and possibilities that are laid out before you even go in.
Yeah. It is true.
I also, this is unrelated, but blew my mind. And I don't know if it's there's something wrong with me that my mind is getting blown by things that maybe are not mind blowable, but nonetheless, you know, Nick and I were talking about something, and somebody in our life is turning 30, and I was like, oh man, it occurred to me that when you turn 30, it's the very first time in your life that you can reflect on having lived a decade. Like in a somewhat meaningful way.
Oh, sure.
Because you can't do it when you're 20.
Yeah.
Because your brain was, I mean, not that your brain is done developing when you're 30, but it's certainly closer to what your adult brain, you've spent more time in your adult brain once you're 30 than you did when you were 20, obviously. So there was, you can't reflect back in the same way you can when you're 30. 30 is really the very first benchmark for
Yeah.
beginning the act of looking back.
Yeah.
And that to me is terrifying and
Oh,
exciting.
it's fucking frightening. Fucking frightening.
You know, and 30 for me happened a while ago, so it's not
Yeah.
like this is something I'm approaching. I'm gearing up to look back from 40 pretty soon, but I've been saying that for like the last 4 years, by the way. Like, as soon as I turned 30, I've been starting to mentally prepare for 40.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't feel like I have that psychology about 40 yet.
It's interesting. I don't have it for 50. Maybe because it seems far enough away that it doesn't seem real.
Yeah.
But I don't have it for 50 in a way I do for 40. I suspect the reason 40 is charged is because it often demarcates the time when it becomes very difficult to have a baby if you wanted one.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it's just got that extra little zhuzh in it.
Oh, an extra zhuzh, you say?
A little zhuzh.
A little
Also,
zhuzh.
there's
Zhuzh.
terrifying statistics that are thrown around, like you have as much likelihood of getting hit by lightning as you do of getting married after 40. Have you
Who would
heard
say
that?
that? Also, yeah, okay, there's a whole implied pressure for marriage in that statement as well.
It's awful, and it's like I'm worried. It doesn't like I'm married, so it's not for me. Like it's just and there is in I'm simply pointing out a cultural phenomena to look at 40 as the end of sexual relevance for women. Like there's this like subtext of seal
Yeah.
it up, shut it down, and that's horseshit because. A 40 for all of us in North America looks like 25.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact that in the 80s, we were being pummeled with that messaging.
Yeah.
I don't know. When in doubt, follow Drew Barrymore on Instagram. That's it. She's my guiding light.
She is your okay, that's great. I'm really glad.
She's a creative, magnificent mess, and I love it.
That's
Anyways.
fantastic. I'm so happy for you.
Do you follow
I
her
don't.
on?
I'm picking up my phone right now
Well, please do.
to
If you cared about my life, Ryan, you'd follow Drew.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, fun.
Oh, jeez.
I wish we have fun. Wait, we have, while you're doing that, I want to bring us back.
Bring us back, Kate. Bring us. I've followed the Barrymore. And now
I
we
am
can
so
come back.
excited. So another fun thing that's happening at Down Under that I'm finally doing is making very short mini videos about practicing in a larger body.
Oh, cute.
And they're not these, but
I saw a cute little blooper on the Instagrams.
oh. So I'm starting to, do things that are outside of my comfort zone that don't require a lot of time, which
Yeah.
is really key for me right now. I feel like I am in a very exciting and productive season, but I'm trying to be careful about not taking on too much, but also still following all the paths that are, interesting to me. So
Yeah.
this was a fun, like, little toe dip into something that I've wanted to play with forever.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to ask, the last time we recorded, the episode was revelatory and sad. What is
And I'm not
What?
sure how I should apologize. There was some significant audio interference for reasons that I cannot figure out. So it was audible, but it was questionable. But go ahead.
It was audible, but it was questioned.
Well, there was that
Okay.
big thunderstorm happening, so I don't know, maybe there was some like weird glitchy thing going on because of that.
Oh.
Which you could hear in the background while we were talking. Just the
Oh, I'm
crashes of
glad.
thunder. Should I this so you're asking for an update on Shambhala stuff
Yes.
in relation to
Yes.
how
Yes,
I'm
please.
feeling. Just so that people don't have to go through the whole last episode, to catch anybody up who hasn't heard, which would probably require you not to be on Facebook or read the New York Times or any other major publication at this point. The head of Shambhala, Osamukpo, sometimes referred to as the Sakyong, was there was a report that was put out detailing three specific stories of what is technically being called clergy sexual misconduct, because in all of these situations he was in, you know, the equivalent of a clergy relationship. And this really brave and wonderful person, Andrea Nguyen, did a lot of hard work and reporting, and is still, you know, considers herself a practitioner of the same teachings that of the man that she exposed. So of the right after we recorded the last podcast, the entire governing council within the Shambhala organization stepped down, and the teacher himself suspended basically any and all teaching until a third party investigation is finished. I have had numerous conversations since then with, you know, people that I really respect in that community. I have reached a state of being completely overprocessed with this whole thing. And I am really hopeful that some really smart people who exist within that community will somehow figure out a way to turn this into something positive and actually reflective of the teachings, but upon much reflections, that's not my job. And I will be stepping away until I see what would need to be a pretty radical shift for me to consider participating. That being said, I still am very supportive of my friends. And just people in the community in general. There were a couple of meetings that were hosted at Bow Street. A couple of the like affinity groups. One of the affinity groups wanted a neutral space to meet. So I was happy to provide that, and like totally happy to help with all that stuff. But me personally, in my own study, in my own practice, it's not like I can erase everything that I have learned. It's the basis of how I learned to meditate. But when I really reflect on what's valuable about what I've learned, I'm not sure how much of it is the teachings that are unique to Trungpa Rinpoche and his son. I really think that the teachings that are valuable and that I continue to hold and practice, and the basis, you know, really from or at least the attitude from which I teach, those are just more broadly Buddhist. I did a couple of times a giant whiteboard inventory of everything that I had learned, in terms of Dharma. And when I really looked at it, the things that I actually find to be valuable are really just Buddhism. They're not particularly Shambhala. I will continue to be supportive of the people that I know and who are interested. I think it's worth starting from scratch. I don't know how you unravel that degree of patriarchy and trauma from a system like that. So I will step away and continue to practice what I find to be valuable and continue to study the Dharma in places that I feel are inclusive and safe and helpful. So that's kind. I mean, if you have questions, Kate, of course you can ask, but this is sort of the last that I really want to talk about this.
Oh, I love you. That's all. I think that's everything you're saying is how I imagine I would feel.
Yeah.
So, I don't have anything to add. I don't have any questions.
Yeah.
You eloquently.
I will say the thing that is actually the most, one of the things that I found that was actually when I did that reflection on, okay, what was valuable about my experience within this, and not even within, is sort of a very sort of on the outskirts relationship with this organization and teachers within it for the past 10 years or so. And there's certainly valuable relationships with teachers that I developed and will continue to hold dear. But one of the things that would make me really sad, really heartbroken about, is if those spaces in which I've done a lot of practice, like Karma Trolling up in Vermont and even SMC, even though it was my first time there, those are really special pieces of land where people have done a lot of practice just more broadly. And it would be heartbreaking if those went away because of these revelations, because they're always kind of on the brink of teetering. And there's not a lot of places like that exist, and especially the ones that are more accessible tend to be places like Kripalu or Omega, which doesn't those places have be those places are quite sterilized, I feel. And certainly someone like Angela or can breathe life into that space. I mean, I had a really wonderful time practicing with Hugh and Lindsay when we went to Kripalu to work with Angela. But finding a container like that for practice is not easy. So I would be heartbroken if those suffered because of this man's behavior.
Well, the hope is it'll be minor, if at all, and that they are able to adapt and pivot if need be to maintain the the space that they are and the energy that they have and the people that they're inviting in to connect, they can just change to keep up but not disappear.
Yeah, I would hope so. I think the structure of that organization is quite problematic, I think. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how they handle all of this. But I also, you know, I want folks to be, because there's been a lot of, I've had to block quite a few people on social media just because I'm like, I don't really want to like see all of this, because it's not new information. It's just, you know, and to, I think as we said last week, it's just, it's really easy to bypass what's going on, and it's really easy to go to the other extreme. So to just, you know, I've had to hold back a few times in my more angry moments when I've realized that someone sitting across from me is really in the midst of quite a bit of grief around this. Those have been interesting moments of just being like, oh, like as much anger as you're feeling towards this organization, you actually care about this person, and they are in the midst of a far greater grief than you're experiencing. And so that expressing that anger is not actually skillful in this moment, like in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, I feel like I've talked to all of the people that I really care about and really have you sort of like fond memories of being on retreat with them and everything like that. And now that I've connected with them on that regard, I just feel like it's a good time to step away from the organization and just kind of do my own thing. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that and giving us a peek inside how difficult that might be and must be, and the unique ways people respond.
Yeah. Yeah.
I go right to anger.
Yeah, anger is
rage.
Yeah, anger is appropriate. I don't really want to go down that rabbit hole. Never mind.
All right, I'm going to give you a new topic then, if you don't want to go down that rabbit hole, because there's something that I wanted to touch on while we still can. Standards review. Can you tell us anything about that and what's going on?
So I can't speak to the content of the meetings necessarily because, well, not the least of which is because we've only had one and it's been more of like an orientation type of meeting. But I can say, in fact, they want us to say that I am involved in one of the Yoga Alliance standards review working groups, which you can read more. There's not actually a ton on the website, but you can read about this whole project at YA Standards. Actually, I don't know what I'll put the thing in the show notes. You can go read. So the working group that I'm on is the teacher qualifications working group. There's, I think like, it's like 10 or 12 of us on the working group. plus facilitators, I think. I could be getting those numbers wrong. There's a lot of people on it. Yeah, so it's been really interesting over the past week to be thinking about things like hours and just sort of the very, very tricky scope of what's going on here with Yoga Alliance. Because I have never been really, well, I guess I say this. Regardless of what changes are made, I'm going to continue to teach my teacher training courses in the way that I find to be most effective. And if that means at some point that I can't be, a registered yoga school because I'm outside of what their standards dictate, then fine, I don't care. That's fine. But it is as I've been doing a lot of writing my thoughts down about this, it's really, really far trickier than I think people imagine. Especially when I consider, like, it's one thing to set a standard for a specific community, right? Like, it's one thing to say within the Iyengar community, these are the standards that we're upholding in terms of this is how a teacher is trained, this is how you move up in certification rankings, etc., etc. And those standards do sort of shift and mold and change a little bit as the years go by, but there's a clear standard, right? But the second that you even try to say, like, okay, so we need to set a standard for something like the Iyengar community and the Ashtanga community, it's just totally hypothetical. This is not actually what the working group is about. Then all of a sudden, you have to dilute the standard enough to fit both sometimes divergent methods. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And it's and you know, the people who are always out there shouting for more hours, one thing that I keep coming back to, and I believe there's a whole other working group that Yoga Alliance has convened on inclusivity. If you're really looking for inclusivity and you all of a sudden raise the bar on hours, and then you thereby probably raising the market rate for a 200 for a introductory teacher training, then you start to make it harder and harder and harder and harder and harder for folks to have an opportunity to take a teacher training and then therefore have the opportunity to be a teacher. And if there aren't folks of different marginalized identities at the front of the classroom, then there will not be a greater diversity within the yoga community more broadly. So it's a far trickier needle to thread. I always knew that, but as I really like sit down and parse it out, I keep finding these little things that are like, oh wow, maybe we should just like start from scratch instead of trying to modify. But we'll see,
Well, I think that starting from scratch conceptually is always smart, and that's what you guys can have the opportunity to do in those groups. Like, to just say, all right, theoretically, if we were to start from scratch,
What would
tabula
that look
rasa,
like?
what might it look like?
And to be fair, like, none of these working groups are create any sort of like I have any sort of binding decision making process. Like, we just it is a working group. We work on things, and then those things are looked at with a bunch of other factors by Yoga Alliance, and then they ultimately will get to choose what suggestions, if any, what things they're going to actually attempt to implement. We're just a bunch of, quite literally, because it's all on Zoom calls, talking heads, just parsing out ideas, and those ideas will be compiled, and there may be changes made, and there may not be. So it'll be an interesting thing to observe. But I do find myself like deeply interested in what the other working groups are doing, because I was like, that would be really helpful to our discussion. Like, to know what the inclusivity group is talking about and to know what the curriculum group is taught, like, that'd be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
As if they're not somehow inextricably bound.
yes, because that's the tricky thing, is all of it, when I look at the other working groups, all of them are inextricably bound up together. So hopefully someone is able to do some analysis on everything that the individual working groups come up with. And I don't expect any sort of like radical change that everyone's going to be jumping up and down and cheering about. I don't expect that at all. But I think it will be an interesting, I think there will be folks that look at the changes and maybe decide, like, you know what? This organization is moving in a direction that I still want to support, and then I feel like there'll be a whole bunch of other folks that you're like, you know what, this organization is not moving in a direction that I think is helpful, and people will leave, and that's fine because they don't have any binding power. They have more binding power than they claim to, because there are
No.
folks in like outside of the yoga world that think they are a regulatory agency.
Yeah, and a couple of big employers will all scramble to do whatever y'all say,
Yes,
like
absolutely,
we'll come together and then all of there's also a kind of like a there's like a hysterical beauty to that. Like, if things were to shift, watching, for example, YogaWorks, then say
Sure.
30,000 people, oh, you guys are all going to have to add this, or oh, that thing that we insisted on, it doesn't really matter. And oh, by the way, our entire business model is about to change because we're going to adhere to this. And so now all of our 200 hours are going to go away in lieu of a pyramid stacking, blah, blah, blah.
Well, no, I do think that any like changes that would prompt an industry-wide panic of that degree would probably be staged out in a little bit more of like January 1's not going to hit, and they're going to be like, okay, everyone has to do this now. Like, those changes will be smaller, and then there may be other changes that are made more, but then there also might not be. Like, I don't know. We're just a group of people chatting about teacher training qualifications. Who knows whether what we say will end up on a final thing.
Oh, I think it will. Because if it doesn't, then who made the choice? If it wasn't the agora of thinking heads, like the best and brightest of the industry, then who the hell is making the choice? So I think whatever you guys come up with is going to have a massive implication.
Yeah, unless we can't come to a consensus on anything, and then it's just then that doesn't, which I don't I like I don't know that we I don't know that we would. Like, the point is not to have a consensus building set of groups. Like, it's just to talk these issues out and see where we are.
So how many, can I ask about the structure? How many times are you meeting? What's the
I don't know the like total number yet. But it will be at least, I think it will be at least like 3 to 5 long conversations. And then like we're asked to sort of scribe down our thoughts in between, and send them along. So Again, like it, like at this point with Yoga Alliance, for me anyway, it's just like, they could make some positive changes, and I'll sort of retrofit whatever I think is best, for the courses that I lead to fit into their thing. But I'm not going to. I won't do it the other way. Right? Like I won't take the standards and build a training. I will build a training and then be like, okay, how do I snip here and there to like make it fit into, because usually it's just a matter of changing the wording. Like it's just a matter of fitting it into the categories that are laid out. Like it's just a sort of intellectual exercise. But that's because right now the standards are so broad, that I don't know, that you can really squeeze, like, any style of yoga could squeeze into them, right? Like, that's the idea. So, and I don't think a lot of people necessarily understand that until they've had to go in and write out a teacher training, just how broad those things are. Yeah, and they would have to be in order to accomplish the thing they're trying to accomplish. So, but it's, it was very, I was flattered that they asked, and I look forward to the process. Obviously, I'm only really allowed to speak about my own experience of it, because it would be pointless. Like, confidentiality is necessary so that everyone feels safe to throw out radical ideas if they want to. So it's not like, which I think is really important. I think some people would say, well, that's not very transparent, but like, everybody needs to be allowed to
A creative
a
process.
creative process to throw out ideas, because I think we can all agree, I think even the people at Yoga Alliance would agree, that like, changes need to be made. We just got to figure out what the hell they are.
No, what you want is, for people to have creative freedom to compile ideas, and then once you start narrowing it down, that's when there could be transparency, because it would be interesting to see what sort of the top contending thoughts are.
Transparency among ideas, not necessarily transparency upon who had those
Who?
ideas.
Oh,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Although, in retrospect, for historical purposes, it would be valuable to be able to. I don't know. Actually, I'm going to backpedal. I always.
I mean, I agree with you to a certain extent, and one of the concerns I have about the whole process in general is these are people who, I can't speak for the other working groups, but just judging by who's listed on the website as being part of the working groups, because that's all public, who's in the, though I don't think they've updated all of them with everybody that's participating yet. Because I know they harassed me yesterday for a headshot and bio, which I had to quickly write because I didn't have a third person bio. What was I saying? I totally lost my train of thought.
Who's in what group?
Oh, so one of the concerns that I have about the process more broadly is like, I'm trying to keep very keenly aware that I am a stakeholder in this industry, whether I like it or not. And so me sitting in a position of power, even though it might not be very much power sitting on these working groups, because who knows if they're going to listen to what I have to say, I just need to be aware of that, like be aware of that dynamic, because if we all have, as I do, some vested interest in the status quo, then there's just a danger of really valuable ideas and really valuable and maybe somewhat radical changes not being brought to the table because of fear of livelihood being threatened. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to very much keep that in mind, like how out of the box can I push myself and remove the reality that, like, at least for the moment, my livelihood comes from owning a yoga studio that happens to teach courses that do qualify people to get in front of the classroom and teach and register with Yoga Alliance. I'm very much trying to keep that context in mind, as I think and write about this topic.
Huh. I need to go creep around on who's in what.
It doesn't it when I looked on it this morning, like, they didn't have my name up, and they didn't have, like, a bunch of people up that I know that are doing it, so I think they might be a little, or like me, nobody sent in a bio. Because that's totally possible too.
Well, that's why we're in business. Bio writing.
Yes, indeed. You could just you just travel the country writing people's bios, just like a suitcase typewriter, and you could
You got a
just
bio? Bring me a bio. Step on up. I'll give you a deal. Two bios for the price of one bio. Short form, long form. What do you got? First person, third person. Let's go. Second person. Oh, keep it weird. Get your bio. Definitely suspenders, high-waisted,
Yes,
pinstripe.
absolutely. With the why can't I think of the name of the hat? There's a particular type of hat you would be wearing for this, as well as, like, maybe a bolo tie.
And like a there's a cigar.
Yes, there's absolutely a cigar.
There's a carpet bag, that's for sure. Yeah.
And maybe there's Nick following behind you with a little player piano, just.
Oh, I was almost going to say something because I forgot that we're recording.
Okay, well then maybe it's time to wrap
That's a
it
good
up.
time. Yeah, the filter started to drop down. Let's wrap her up. This has been unrolled.
This has been Unrolled. You can follow us on all of the things at Unrolled Podcast. You can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/unrolledpodcast. Our website is www.unrolledpodcast.com. And I don't know what else.
Questions, comments, concerns,
Yes.
topics you want us to tackle, or things you just want to say hi. We love hearing from you. So
unrolledpodcast@gmail.com.
unrolledpodcast@gmail.com. All right, guys. Godspeed.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, how do I turn this off again? Oh, here we go.